taxpayer funds were used for a settlement for a woman who claimed she was fired for refusing him. This is USA Radio News.
Lumber Liquidators Cyber Week flooring deals are going on now. Get a deal and get it done with easy to install laminate for just 59 cents. Or worry-proof your home for the holidays with waterproof engineered vinyl plank on.
USA Radio News with Ron Taylor.
Sexual harassment scandals are continuing to rock Capitol Hill. It was revealed today that Congressman Blake Farenthold settled a sexual harassment claim lodged by a former employee for $84,000. The revelation represents the first taxpayer-funded settlement of its kind that has so far been made public. The settlement came after the Texas Republican's former communications director, Lauren Green, brought a complaint against the congressman for harassment and discrimination. A new report says top NBC executives received complaints about Matt Lauer and did nothing.
The New York Post says women did complain about Lauer's behavior, but it was all brushed under the carpet long before he was fired for harassment. In addition, it says some of Lauer's co-hosts were putting on a show when they acted shocked regarding reports of his sexually inappropriate behavior. One female staffer said they feared Matt and the repercussions it would have on their careers if they complained because Matt controlled the show. Lisa G., New York.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn-Root. I was one of the biggest critics of Obama in the national media. Suddenly, I was under massive IRS attack. So I hired Sam Landis. Sam did an amazing job. We won twice. I didn't owe a penny. Thank you, Sam Landis. Many of you have IRS problems, and you've spent thousands with non-lawyer tax resolution firms. Do yourself a favor. Call Sam Landis for a free consultation. Trust me, Sam Landis is the best. Sam saved my life. Call Sam at 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. That's toll-free, 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. 800-WE-HELP-YOU.
To most, the holidays sound something like this. But when you have a million things to do, the holidays can sound much different. Fortunately, Staples has the latest electronic gifts, like Bluetooth headphones and speakers, to streaming devices and smart home solutions.
Google Play holiday music.
Even board games like Monopoly. Staples has great gift ideas that will bring a smile to everyone on your list. Staples, more holiday fun, less holiday hassles.
Walmart is yanking a T-shirt it's been selling online that advocates lynching journalists. USA's Chris Barnes has the story.
Walmart says it was made aware on Wednesday of a shirt on its Walmart.com site that's being sold by a third-party seller that includes the words, Rope, Tree, Journalist, Some Assembly Required. The retailer pulling the shirt after it was alerted by a Press Freedom Association that it was the only major retailer selling it. The Radio Television Digital News Association saying at least 48 journalists have been killed around the world so far this year alone.
The House Ethics Committee is taking action to crack down on sexual harassment. Committee Chair Susan Brooks sent a letter to the Office of Compliance, which handles harassment complaints. In the letter, Brooks asked for information on all claims of sexual harassment or misconduct against House members and their staff. Representative John Conyers is facing calls to resign after reports that taxpayer funds were used for a settlement for a woman who claimed she was fired for refusing him. This is USA Radio News.
Lumber Liquidators Cyber Week flooring deals are going on now. Get a deal and get it done with easy-to-install laminate from just 59 cents. Or worry-proof your home for the holidays with waterproof engineered vinyl plank on sale. Buy online at LumberLiquidators.com and get it delivered or pick up for free at your local store. Even get coupon savings on our best-selling hardwood floors. More deals from 49 cents and professional installation, plus special financing. Hurry, get to Lumber Liquidators today.
Recapping our top story, sexual harassment scandals are continuing to rock Capitol Hill. It was revealed today that Congressman Blake Farenthold settled a sexual harassment claim lodged by a former employee for $84,000. The revelation represents the first taxpayer-funded settlement of its kind that has so far been made public. The U.S. Postal Service is kicking off another year of Operation Santa. Millions of letters are sent to the post office every year directed for the bearded man in the red suit.
Dear Santa, can I please have a scooter for Christmas? I've been a good girl.
Post office officials say Operation Santa designates postal workers to become elves by responding to the letters and fulfilling wishes. Officials are encouraging the public to participate in what's now the 105th year of the program. Post office elf Mike Munoz says there are letters coming in from Puerto Rico.
The people on the island are still begging for water, so Christmas isn't really going to be a reality for these people.
A new study is backing up all the dog lovers who say dogs are smarter than cats. Correspondent Mark Mayfield gives us pause.
Researchers at Vanderbilt University found that a dog's cerebral cortex has more than twice as many neurons as a cat's brain. neurons are strongly related to intelligence because they're the brain cells associated with thinking, planning, and complex behaviors. The leader of the study said dogs have the biological capability to do much more complex and flexible things with their lives than cats can.
So from all of us dog owners to you cat owners, doggone it, we're awfully sorry about that. I'm Ron Taylor, and this is USA Radio News.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hutton Chamber Radio entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Well, good afternoon, Hunterdon. I'm Pat Smits, host of It's the Law. But before we start talking legal issues, why don't we talk a bit about the weather? If you've been outside today, it was another unseasonably warm, at least I think so. But then I grew up in Wisconsin, so by December 1st, it was freezing. But today was sunny, and tonight should be freezing, low of about 27. But by tomorrow, partly sunny, high of about 49 degrees. So that should be a really nice day. And even better is Sunday, should be a sunny day on Sunday. And we can look forward to mostly sunny on Monday. Again, high of about 50 degrees tomorrow, 51 on Monday. And there was some talk about getting much colder, but so far, although the nights are cold, the days have been really pretty nice. By Tuesday, we can expect a chance of showers. Again, high of about 58 degrees, but about a 40% chance of showers on Tuesday, and there are likely showers on Tuesday night. So get out this weekend. I know there's the parade on Sunday in Flemington, and the balloons are downstairs all waiting to go out, and they expect thousands of people at the parade. So come on out and support Hunterdon. And as you know, the Chamber supports all of the local events. So what's happening in legal news? And by the way, I'll just play one spot and get back and talk to you about what's happening in legal news.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Okay, we're back, and I'm just going to bring you up to date on some of the legal news. And, of course, there's a lot of political news out there, and I guess it's not going to stop. And certainly I'm not going to talk politics, believe me, although now we will be seeing a new administration here in New Jersey. And so Governor-elect Phil Murphy is nominated or tapped or whatever you want to say, Michael Stein, who is the chairman and managing partner of Hackensack's Pashman Stein Walder Hayden. That's a law firm there, and he's been named to the transition team, Governor-elect's transition team. So there will be new players, although not that many new players in Trenton, since the way our districts are, do we call it gerrymandered? It's generally fairly easy for legislators, both state and federal, to get elected time after time. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing. It's just a reality. Now, there was an interesting case for some people. There was a purported Telephone Consumer Protection Act class action against Kohl's Department Store, and that has been dismissed by a federal judge because the plaintiff failed to follow explicit instructions for stopping text messages from the company. So that is, if in fact you're looking to file a class action, and I don't think most people are, but in any event, if you're getting text messages or telephone calls, you have to follow the specific instructions to stop them. And if you follow the specific instructions and they don't stop, then you have a right to complain. Now, there's a lot of issues coming up on cybersecurity audits, but I'm not going to go into that today. The a move came after a plaintiff in a lawsuit filed an emergency appeal in the Second Circuit, pleading for a stay on the geography-based process used to allocate organ transplants, so that apparently there was a new transplant policy adopted after a patient who was desperate for a lung, I should say, sued. So that this is, of course, very significant to those people who need organs and how they're allocated. And frankly, I know nothing about it, and I don't think most people do, unless, in fact, they need an organ or someone in their family needs an organ. So the what else? There's some cases that were approved, criminal law cases approved for publication, and there was a case that the appellate division reversed a defendant's conviction for operating a motor vehicle while his license was suspended for a second or subsequent driving while intoxicated conviction. And if you're at all interested, you do have to look at the statute. Driving while intoxicated, DWI, sometimes it is also referred to DUI, driving under the influence. So what happened in this case, and the statute, the specific statute, is NJSA 2C:40-26(b). So while his license was suspended for a second DWI conviction, and that was when the police stopped him, his license was suspended for a second DWI conviction. However, before trial, he successfully petitioned for post-conviction relief, so that the order granting post-conviction relief vacated his prior DWI convictions and remanded both matters to the municipal court for new trials. Now, on remand, the municipal court dismissed one DWI charge, and the defendant pled guilty to the other. So what did that mean? Well, as a result of the post-conviction relief and the remand proceedings, at the time of his trial for violating the statute, he only had one prior DWI conviction, not two. So accordingly, the state could not prove an element of the crime charged, which was the second DWI conviction. And that was a prerequisite to the mandatory 180-day incarceration period imposed by the statute. So, this guy needs to stay off the road, obviously, but the statute is very specific as to when someone has to serve that 180-day, and it is mandatory incarceration imposed for the third DWI conviction. And, of course, after a period of time, it used to be 10 years. So after a period of time, the conviction would not be a second. It would be considered a first. But the real story here is, you know, if you're going to drive, get someone else to drink, because the mandatory sentences, the fines, the loss of license in New Jersey is very serious, and unlike other states, there are no real exceptions. For example, you can't drive to and from work. There are other states allow people to put a breathalyzer on their car and drive to and from work or have other restrictions. And in New Jersey, we're really tough. It's not criminal, except once you get beyond, the first DWI conviction is not a criminal conviction in New Jersey. In other places, it is. So, but it's something to be very careful about, especially in the holidays. There was another case that the appellate division just simply said that the judgment was affirmed, and it was substantially for the reasons expressed in a prior opinion. So the first case, if you're interested in the DUI case, was State versus Leon Fazen. And as I said, that was an appellate division case that was decided on November 29th. Then there is a case where the defendant appealed from his convictions and sentence, asserting several arguments which challenge the determinations by the trial judge. So specifically, the defendant characterized the errors as an exclusion of his expert testimony evaluating the reliability of voice identification evidence and discussing factors affecting the reliability of what was termed ear witness identification. That's interesting because I think most attorneys and other people will say that it's eyewitness identification can be very suspect. It's a real problem. There have been many people convicted based on eyewitness testimony that are later proven innocent, and I really mean innocent because a DNA test will show that they were not the perpetrator. And this is especially difficult when the eyewitness is of one race identifying the alleged perpetrator who is of another race. But in this case, the question was voice identification and what was whether that was reliable, and it was termed ear witness identification. The second thing he said was an error was the admission of what the defendant characterizes as the state's prejudicial, irrelevant gang expert evidence. And the third was the trial judge admitted the state's, what the defendant said was misleading expert testimony pertaining to the chemicals toluene, T-O-L-U-E-N-E, never heard of that one, and D5 found at the scene. And the court affirmed the evidentiary rulings, noting that the judge fully determined the limits of admissibility of all evidence. And when deeming certain subjects inadmissible, the trial judge detailed findings, including the expert who was found not to be qualified to address the area. So that's a very significant thing. You have to have an expert who, in fact, has the qualifications to testify about what he or she says they have expertise in. So that the trial judge also said that the testimony risked misleading the jury, and the concepts related to matters of common sense and the opinion tended to tread on the jury's credibility determinations. So now, interestingly, one of the judges dissented from this decision and rejecting the limitations placed on the proffered evidence. Now, I have not read the full case, but in New Jersey, when there's a dissent, when one judge dissents in the appellate division, there is a right to go up to the Supreme Court. And that's one of the things in New Jersey is generally you will have either a two-panel appellate division judges or three. And if there's a three panel and one of them dissent, then that's the right to go up to the Supreme Court automatically. Otherwise, you have to petition the Supreme Court, and they take very few cases compared to the number of cases decided by the appellate division. And what will happen if there's any concern, if a two-judge panel is initially scheduled to hear the argument, they will have a third judge take part in the decision. Then there were a number of cases, of course, that there was a trust and estates case that's interesting, and maybe I'll have John Manfreda, even though it was not published, he might,
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Nothing like getting a call, unsolicited call for some junk call on the cell phone while I'm on the radio. Sorry for that. I have been expecting the possibility of someone calling in for the program or at least the sports program, so I did not turn my phone off. So what there's another case that was certainly of some interest to some people, and that's the grandmother of a New Jersey infant who was permanently disabled as a result of child abuse and whose $166 million verdict against the state was reversed, is now suing her former attorney and his firm for malpractice. So here's a woman who won $166 million verdict against the state, and that was reversed, and now she's suing her attorneys for malpractice. I guess not so sure how that is going to work out in light of the fact that, and I have not read the appellate division decision, but certainly a jury ruled in her favor. So I'm not sure how she thinks she's going to win a malpractice suit. But I haven't read the appellate decision. But she certainly, her attorney obviously did a great job for her at the trial level. Now, it's interesting. We're always talking about settlement because most cases do settle. And so there's an issue of what makes one case more difficult to settle than another. Well, sometimes the factual and legal issues in dispute are complex, and they require significant time and energy to resolve. And then, of course, other times, however, the roadblock to resolution has little to do with the actual issues, but much more to do with the mindset of parties regarding settlement itself. And so that it's very important to realize, and most of the time clients do understand when recommendations are made for settlement. And, you know, the fact is that there's a compromise. Generally, neither side is happy. There are some cases where there is going to be a winner and a loser. And, for example, what comes to mind in the family arena is whether or not someone is going to be able to relocate out of state with children, because it of necessity means that one parent, the parent who stays behind in New Jersey, parenting time is going to be changed and could be changed significantly. So that's a real tough one because, you know, the person who wants to move, either they're winning by being able to move or they're being told they can't move and so they're losing. But that is also probably the toughest, along other than abuse cases. These are tough cases because, you know, it rarely can both parents move if one decides they want to. So that, but the settlement cases, I mean, if it's very complex, it makes it more difficult to settle. Not necessarily impossible, but just more difficult because there are so many more issues that have to be resolved. Now, the there was another decision as far as allocation of risk among successive insurance policies where injury occurs over extended period of time. And that's a little bit esoteric, but it becomes important to the insurance companies. Now there's, in the flood of work-related sexual harassment, and I guess we've all heard of all of the work-related sexual harassment, and not just work-related, but, there's been a floodgate. But the allegations pouring out after women come forward with allegations against Harvey Weinstein, that seemed to be, you know, opening the floodgates. Some ask why victims of such abuses don't speak out sooner. Well, frankly, I'm not going to go into this issue, but it's not at all unusual. Anybody who's worked with children who've been abused or women who've been harassed, sexually harassed, or any kind of harassment, traditionally, women did not speak out because they didn't want to lose their job. They didn't want to lose their reputation, depending on how serious the allegations were. And it was very difficult to be believed. I mean, it usually is a he said, she said situation. And but when there's smoke, there's fire. And one of the things, the real concern that I have, and I'll speak out, this is my view, but how anyone could say that they would vote for a pedophile because they didn't want the other party, meaning in this case, of course, we're talking about Roy Moore, and that they would vote for him because they'd rather see a pedophile in office rather than a Democrat is truly outrageous. And it would be as outrageous if it was the other way around. And we have to think about what kind of a message that is sending. And, of course, that case that is well documented. I mean, what he did is well documented. And, of course, what Harvey Weinstein did is well documented. And then we have the example of NBC, who, when they had legitimate reason to do so, legitimate reason to believe the woman who made the allegations, and now there have been more women making allegations, they fired him. And doesn't mean that they won't be sued, but in fact they fired him. But why wouldn't these women come forward? Well, let's say in the case of Matt Lauer, he's a very powerful, was very powerful at NBC, and, you know, they would likely, certainly would have been afraid of losing their job. I know that this has gone on in corporations and law firms and in other places, and, you know, usually the man in that situation is in a higher position, higher level position, and the woman, maybe secretary, maybe young law associate, is worried about losing her job and also losing the ability. I know that there have been some situations where there was one with one of the judges, and of course it came out the woman won, but she really never practiced law in New Jersey. So anyone who doesn't understand why the victims don't speak out sooner really doesn't understand what the history has been with respect to sexual harassment and assault. I think what's happening now will give women, children, and men who are harassed an incentive to say something sooner. And that's going to be good. But this isn't going to go away. And it won't go away until it stops. And I think now men in powerful situations are going to be much more careful. And especially when more and more of these situations are brought to light, especially, for example, the most recent one with Matt Lauer. So let's go to a few commercials. Sorry, I'm kind of all over the place here, but let's go to a few spots, and then we'll be back with more of the legal news.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Okay, back. I'm Pat Smits, a lawyer here in Hunterdon County. My practice is limited to family law, but obviously I'm not going to speak week after week about family law. And I try to bring you up to date on some of the things that are happening in the legal world. And one of the things that employees might be interested in is that a federal appellate court offered a clear rule earlier this year in holding that employees must be paid for breaks lasting 20 minutes or less. Now, there was some expectation that there would be a flood of lawsuits, but private lawsuits on the issue have really been very few and appear to be, it does not appear to be something that's going to come up very often. And that's probably because most employers would, in fact, pay for short breaks, and they don't tell their employees that they have to go off the clock when they have a 15-minute coffee break. Now, the as people know, people who know me know that I am a big football fan. Well, there's some question, and the lead attorney in the NFL concussion settlement has been very critical of numerous third-party litigation funding companies. Now, what that is a litigation funding company will loan money when they think that the plaintiff in a case is going to get a good settlement. And in this case, the companies that have loaned money to retired players involved in the class action. And at this point, but the alleged failure to publicly disclose his history with another litigation funding company that has raised some, questions how this particular attorney, in light of the fact that he's involved in another litigation, I should say funding company, funding litigation, or funding settlements. I mean, it's not that they're funding necessarily the litigation, but if they see a case that they expect someone to, you know, perhaps get $1 million, they're willing to fund it. They're willing to also provide money to that plaintiff. Now, the apparently J.C. Morgan wants to have 50% women or lawyers from other underrepresented demographic groups in leadership positions on its litigation matters, as well as among its chosen arbitrators. I guess we shall see, because traditionally, of course, that has not been the case. Now, there was a family law case that was approved for publication this week. It had to do with domestic violence, and in that case, the parties, and they're identified by initials, and that's usually what happens, but this is an appellate case, and the parties both filed for and obtained mutual restraining orders following an argument. Now, it's unusual that there would be mutual restraining orders, but in this case, the appellant, the person who filed the appeal, argued that the respondent scratched, punched, and kicked him. Now, the respondent denied any physical altercation and recounted an incident which occurred the prior year, wherein the appellant allegedly threw out of the vehicle. So probably it's easier just to call, instead of appellant respondent, let's call it man and woman. So in this case, the man and woman filed for mutual restraining orders following an argument where the man argued that the woman scratched, punched, and kicked him. The woman denied any physical altercation and recounted an incident which occurred the prior year where she alleged that the man threw her out of a vehicle. Now, the interesting thing here is that the court, in any case, must make findings of fact and reach conclusions of law. The other thing that people need to know that in filing a domestic violence complaint, the complaint is filed based on the incident that happened at that time, but also the victim needs to put in prior acts. In other words, the court, in looking as to whether or not there should be a final restraining order, not only looks at the incident that happened now, but also looks back at the history. Now, obviously, if it's a very, very serious incident, somebody stabbed, shot, ends up in the hospital with multiple fractures, that incident alone would be enough to get a final restraining order. However, in other cases where it's more harassment, they look to a pattern. In other words, was it just one time where somebody may have shoved and there's been no prior history of domestic violence? So it's very important for the victim to allege any prior acts of
domestic violence. But in any event, in this case, the trial judge, the trial court, issued final restraining orders to both parties. And based on what the trial judge said is that they each, and I'm quoting, probably committed acts of domestic violence towards the other. Now, in this case, the man who filed the appeal argued the trial court erred by issuing the final restraining order without making a finding that he committed a predicate offense, meaning the, he just said probably, and because the woman was not in need of further protection. So, as I said, usually it's not only the incident, but some predicate offense. So the trial court, hearing an application, and this is the appellate division, confirmed that a trial court hearing an application for a final restraining order must make two determinations. One, whether the plaintiff had proved by a preponderance of the evidence that defendant committed an act of domestic violence. So that's the first thing. Was whatever happened an act of domestic violence? And then, if so, whether a restraining order was necessary to protect the plaintiff. And this goes back to a case, Silver versus Silver, in 2006. So in this case, the appellate division reversed the holding the trial that the trial court concluded that the parties probably committed acts of domestic violence without specifically saying which act or acts under the statute were committed. So the appellate division said, in this case, the first prong of the Silver decision was not sufficiently analyzed by the trial court. And also they said that the same conclusion was reached as to the second prong, given the trial court made a conclusory finding, at some point someone is going to get hurt. That's what the trial judge said. Quote, at some point someone is going to get hurt. Well, that's not sufficient. As the trial court failed to engage in the analysis that they're required to engage under Silver, the trial court decision was reversed and remanded for further proceedings. So that's what happens in the appellate division. If in this case, it doesn't mean that it goes away. It's what it means is it's going to go back to the trial court and go back to the trial court to kind of a do-over. So now perhaps the parties will settle. But otherwise, there's going to have to be another trial. There was a landlord-tenant case that was also approved for publication. And as again, that means, no, I'm sorry, it was not approved for publication. And neither was this domestic violence case. I thought it was, but it was not. So that means it's not precedent. However, the family law case, anyone who does any kind of domestic violence work knows that you have to do the two-prong analysis, and the trial court needs to do the two-prong analysis under the Silver case. And the statute itself is they're all criminal acts that they've incorporated in domestic violence. So it could be assault, it could be harassment, could be burglary, stalking, any one of the what are otherwise crimes or are crimes in the domestic violence. It's the same statute. So, for example, assault is defined under the statute for assault. So it very often it's not actually an assault. It's more of a harassment because you have to look at the statute. So let's take another break for a commercial, and let's see who wants to give us the commercials at this point. And well, let's see who we're going to hear from. I'm really sorry, by the way, that we no longer have Pambies and that they've gone out of business. They had terrific ice cream, and that was unfortunate that they were not able to make it in business.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Okay, we're back. Program It's the Law. I'm Pat Smits, and just talking about some of the cases that have been published and unpublished recently decided by it's the appellate division, usually the cases that are published, and sometimes, of course, even the unpublished cases can be important. There's a creditor and debtor's rights case that I think is interesting, although it's not a published opinion. In this case, defendants appealed the final judgment of foreclosure and also five what we call pendente litis orders, which means orders that were entered prior to the foreclosure. So what happened is they executed a note and a mortgage to a bank, and the bank subsequently failed. So as a result of that, the FDIC became its receiver and assigned the defendant's mortgage to the plaintiff, and the plaintiff in this case was IndyMac Venture LLC. So in this case, because what happened is the original plaintiff later assigned the mortgage to a second bank, which filed the foreclosure action. And while the litigation was pending, a second bank assigned the mortgage back to the plaintiff. So I guess the plaintiff was the first one. That's why these things can get so complicated. And the complaint was amended. So the defendants had argued that the plaintiff lacked standing to file the complaint because it was not in possession of the mortgage when the complaint was filed. So then the defendants later admitted the assignment of the mortgage. The trial court also found the technical error it was an incorrect holder of the mortgage, and the trial court said that was insignificant because the incorrectly named holder was a division of the actual holder. So in other words, the defendants were trying to trying to deal with the fact that perhaps the mortgage was not held correctly. And however, the court, the appellate court, found that none of the defendant's arguments on appeal warranted a written decision, and because the defendants had failed to articulate any argument in support of their contention that the mortgage assignment was defective, and their other arguments were not supported on the record. So they took a very tough stance against the defendants in that case. So there was another a case where a defendant moved to dismiss a plaintiff's complaint for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, and in that case, the plaintiff alleged the defendant violated the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act when it sent the plaintiff and others similarly situated a debt collection letter that omitted the statutorily required disclosures. Now, specifically, in that case, the plaintiff alleged that the letter failed to communicate that requests to verify the debt or obtain the name and address of the original creditor had to be provided in writing. So the plaintiff in that case alleged that by failing to make this disclosure, the defendant used, and this is quote, used a false representation or deceptive means to collect or attempt to collect any debt or to obtain information concerning a consumer. So in this case, in support of its motion, the defendant argued the plaintiff lacked standing because she failed to allege an intangible harm satisfying the injury in fact requirement. That's how back and forth and intricate some of these arguments can be. So in this case, this was a United States District Court. The court rejected the defendant's argument, ruling that prior cases had held that a debt collector's failure to provide statutorily required disclosures was real and was a real and concrete injury sufficient to confer standing. And the court further noted that other district courts have found Article III standing for the same allegations levied against the same letter mailed by defendant that was an issue in this case. And so, therefore, in this case, they denied the defendant's motion to dismiss the plaintiff's complaint. So remember, this was they wanted to dismiss based on a lack of subject matter jurisdiction. And in this case, the federal court, the district court said no, denied it. Doesn't mean that we don't know what's going to go on in the future, but at least they succeeded in proceeding. Now, there was a family law case, again, initials DM versus KM. This was not published, but in that case, the defendant appealed from the trial court's order denying reconsideration of its prior orders. And the reason I bring this case up is, what does this mean? Well, when a trial court issues an order, if someone is dissatisfied, they can ask the court for reconsideration. They can file another motion and try to explain to the trial court why the order was an error and ask that the trial court reconsider it. And in this case, there was an appeal because the trial court denied reconsideration of its prior orders, dismissing remand of defendant's motion seeking college contribution from the plaintiff and granting plaintiff's tax exemptions for the party's children, and also retroactively terminating child support. So this when they were divorced, the parties signed a property settlement agreement, which was incorporated into their final judgment of divorce. And so property settlement agreement stated that the parties would address college contributions when the children entered college. So they further required the plaintiff to pay child support finally allowed each party to claim a tax exemption. So in this case, then, the defendant alleged that the plaintiff, who owned several businesses during the party's marriage, issued the children payroll checks from one of his businesses, and they were deposited into a college fund. So the defendant further alleged plaintiff used the college fund rather than his own money to pay for the college expenses. So the defendant moved for reimbursement from plaintiff and contribution for future college expenses. In that case, the trial court denied the motion and went on for appeal, and the appellate court affirmed, agreeing that the trial court's finding that defendant did not timely file her motion for reconsideration, she lost as a result of that. So that's about all we have for the law today. We're going to come back right after the news break, and we'll be here with the sports guys. And, of course, today we're going to have our friend and colleague and one of the sports guys who happens to be an Eagles fan, and I'm sure he's going to be crowing as much as possible, since the Eagles have a wonderful season. They haven't won the division yet. I think, in fact, they would have if the Cowboys had not won last night. But in any event, we'll be back shortly after a couple of breaks and the break for the news, and we'll be back to talk sports. So stay tuned.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in?
USA Radio News with Ron Taylor.
How many more figures have to be brought to justice because of their ties with Russia?
A key member of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence says the Flynn guilty plea and the Russia investigation is a story that you can't make up.
Virginia Democrat Mark Warner is one of the ranking members on the Senate committee looking into Russian interference in the presidential election. After Flynn pled guilty to lying to the FBI in the Independent Counsel Russia probe, Warner said he's anxious to hear Flynn's full explanation of his contacts with the Russians.
It's a bit curious that he seemed to have pled guilty to only one charge. So my hope is that General Flynn will tell everything he knows.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says the big Republican tax bill will pass. The Kentucky Republican told reporters he has enough votes after a closed meeting of GOP senators. A final vote is expected to happen later today on the complex package of tax cuts and reforms. All Democrats are expected to vote no, calling the bill a big gift to the wealthy. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root. I'm a father of four, and I worry every day about this dangerous world. There are so many things that